This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The challenge of putting good, healthy food on the table for struggling families is documented throughout the new book, Pressure Cooker. The book is the culmination of 5 years of studying 120 households. It finds that even when a parent is trying her or his best, the challenges still can't be met. And joining Cincinnati Edition today is one of the authors of Pressure Cooker, an associate professor of sociology at North Carolina State University, Sarah Bowen. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Sarah's on the phone with us, and we're also joined today by Amy Holler, the program specialist for expanded food and nutrition education at the Ohio State University Extension Hamilton County office. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you doing?
And we have the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County regional manager, Kathy Bach. Hi.
Hello.
And also with us is the library's Cheviot branch manager, Eric Pennington. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And you're here because the library is hosting some classes to show families how to prepare healthy meals. So we'll talk a little bit about that later. Sarah, let's start with you. Tell us about how you and your co-authors, Jocelyn Brenton and Sanika Elliott, conducted your research for this book, Pressure Cooker.
Well, we started back in 2011. We started the interviews in 2012. And at that time, and still now, we were hearing a lot of messages about how we need to get back in the kitchen, how if families would just sort of prioritize that it's really not that hard. And there was a lot of messages about how what we eat is really tied to our health, but also to the environment and to even what it means to be a family. But we didn't know of a lot of research that had actually talked to families. And in our case, we specifically focused on mothers about the challenges they faced. And so we decided to do that. And we interviewed, actually it was 168 mothers of young children about feeding their family. And then we spent more time, we did observations with 12 of them. So with those families, we went to the grocery store, we went to WIC appointments, we were there as they were making dinner, cleaning up, in the morning, in the middle of the day, on weekends, and really trying to get a sense of what it's really like to feed a family.
How did the family respond to having you present in some of those very vulnerable moments, whether it was seeing, you know, a family that's forced to live in a hotel room or forced to live off of assistance? Did they express any humility, or were they concerned about the way they'd be reflected in the book?
That's a great question. I don't know that anyone specifically, you know, brought that up, but we did. One of the things that I think was an advantage is that we got to know these families fairly well over 5 years, especially the ones that participated in the observation. So it wasn't like we were just going in cold, but certainly, like, it was something that, you know, maybe it was a bit more awkward at the beginning. And then as we spent more time over the course of a month, they got more used to us and we got more used to them. The families in our study, though, most of them were poor and working class families. And one thing is they definitely had heard these messages about, you know, who is deserving and who is not. And some of these debates about whether people should be allowed to use food stamps for sweets or treats, and we heard some of those messages reflected when they would talk to us. Like, they'd say, well, you know, I wouldn't buy this, or I'm just buying this dessert because it's been a really long day, or something like that. But I would say the main thing we saw from families is just how hard all of them across the income spectrum were working to feed their kids and to try to really to do a good job. Dinner was very important to them. And they really wanted to provide healthy meals for their families, but so how hard they were working and how challenging it was just day in and day out.
You sort of just touched on what I wanted to ask about next when you referenced people's ideas about how food stamps, for example, should be spent by the people who are using them. Because this book, Pressure Cooker, notes how class stereotypes shape and influence our ideas about other people's food choices, including this detail that middle-class people actually eat more fast food than poorer people. I learned that from your book. Can you tell us a little bit about those preconceived notions about what other people eat?
Yeah, I think that we hear these messages. Well, we hear a message that we collectively as Americans need to cook more and need to eat healthier. But I think a lot of that message, it's not explicitly stated, but often the implication is that poor families especially need to cook more. And there's this idea that if people would just stop eating fast food and start cooking at home, that we could solve a lot of these inequalities that we see in terms of food. But as you mentioned, poor people actually eat less fast food, and they cook a little bit more at home than middle-class families. And when we first read that, it was kind of a surprise because it's so contradictory to the sort of conventional knowledge. But we saw it in our qualitative study, too. The poor and working-class families, most of them were cooking at home almost every night because even the McDonald's dollar menu is more expensive than cooking at home. But in some cases, but often, I mean, and what they cooked varied. But for a lot of families, it wasn't sort of this ideal, like, from scratch, homemade. Some families were able to do that, but other families, they were only shopping once a month, and that was partly a budgeting strategy, and because some of them didn't have a car, so they couldn't get back and forth to the grocery store. So they were eating a lot of canned produce and processed foods that are going to last all month. So the families in our study, the vast majority were cooking almost every night, but their dinners didn't necessarily live up to the ideal that we hear about what family meals should look like in terms of the food and, you know, even in terms of the context of eating. Like, not all the families had a kitchen table, for example. So there wasn't even a place for the people in the house to sit.
Yeah, one of the families that you profiled was living in room 105 of a hotel room, and you document one of their family meals. And like you said, it's not sitting down at the table and having a conversation over plates of freshly cooked food. This was a frozen pizza in the one anecdote that you shared that was being passed around by the family. And this particular family is an example of one that gets by on less than $2 per day per person. Can you tell us a little bit about the food choices that that type of a family faces in that kind of a living situation?
Yeah, in this case, in this family's case, because they were homeless, that also affected their food choices. So their choices were constrained both by a lack of money, and they had very little cash income. In this family's case, they were getting food stamps, which was a huge help. And I think food stamps are such a central part of keeping poor families in the United States afloat. So I think that's really important to point out. But in the case of Patricia Washington and her family, they were homeless. They were homeless at two points during the study. They weren't homeless when we started, so that wasn't why we included them. But they became homeless at two points during the study. And since they were eating all of their meals in a hotel room, they had to buy a lot of frozen and processed foods, which meant that they were spending more than they would if they'd had a house. So in their case, one of the challenges was not only did they not have a lot of resources in general, financial and otherwise, but it was expensive to be poor, which is true, because they had to pay more for the food because they didn't have a kitchen that they could use, and those kind of processed and frozen things cost more than some other options, but they had to use that, and so they were so their food stamps weren't stretching as far as they would have otherwise.
Okay, Sarah, hang around. We're going to come back to you in just a moment. Let's localize this conversation a little bit because there is an upcoming program starting on Tuesday at the Cheviot branch of the Public Library of Hamilton County in Cincinnati. And Amy, the program that you oversee at the Ohio State Extension Office, which is partnering with the library to present these classes, I want to read the description. It guides participants through a series of community-based workshops aimed at improving diet quality, food safety, and physical activity. Adult participants also gain skills in food preparation and managing their food budget. So talk about the types of families that this program encounters.
Yeah, so it's sort of like what Sarah was saying. We find that a lot of the families that we work with, they have ideas about sort of what they want to be feeding their family and what's healthy and nutritious, and they want to do all of that, but they face a lot of challenges. So the families that we work with are limited resource families in the Hamilton County area, and we just work with them to help them sort of plan, shop, and cook those healthy meals for their families so that they can reap all the benefits of that.
Do you find that the families that come through this program maintain any sort of commitment to the lifestyle that you're encouraging?
So we don't always get to follow up with every family, but when we do, it's always really nice to hear that, yeah, a lot of them really bond with each other through the classes because they are, it's not a class like where someone's lecturing you about, you know, you go to class and they sit there and they tell you this is what you need to eat and this is why. They're very interactive. So we use a dialogue learning focused method of instruction where it's very conversational and everyone is included in the classes and a lot of like hands-on activities and discussions and then, of course, cooking and physical activity in every class. So they really bond throughout the series of classes and a lot of times they're sad when the series ends, so they'll form walking groups or they'll start a community garden, things like that, where they're sort of carrying on some of the healthy habits that they've learned and the friendships that they've made. So we're always really happy when we hear that.
Kathy Bach is the regional manager of the Public Library of Hamilton County in Cincinnati, and Eric Pennington is the branch manager in the Cheviot neighborhood. Kathy, let's start with you. What do you see as a library's role in addressing these issues of people's access to good and healthy foods?
Sure. So the best thing about the public library is that we provide all free resources to our users. You don't have to have a card to come in. You can, anyone, all are welcome at the library. So we really value that open access for everyone. And another part of our mission is just really connecting people to information. So we have 41 locations across the county. Cheviot's the first branch that we're doing this one at, but we hope to get this out into other locations as well. And it's just so great to have 41 places that anyone can come in and access information. So in terms of this, we think it's very important. We want to be a vital part of our community and anything that we can do to help educate and teach families. We also provide after-school snacks for kids, and some of our locations are summer lunch programs during the summer. So we're very committed to children and families.
All right. And Eric, tell us how the program will be set up at your library when this starts tomorrow.
So the program is going to be held in our meeting room in the basement. Right now we have 12 families that are signed up, but there is room for additional families. If anyone would like to sign up, they can go online or give us a call at the Cheviot branch, which is 369-6015, and we'd be happy to sign you up. So there are spaces available. It's going to run for 9 workshops, so it's going to be Tuesdays. Starting tomorrow from 6 to 7:30 p.m. That's going to go all the way out to November 12th. And we're really excited about it at our location because Cheviot's a community that has a lot of working class families. We have a lot of single moms, you know, people who are can struggle to put food on the table, you know, good food on the table rather than hot dogs and ramen, like sometimes I do at home. But we're really excited about it, and there's been a lot of excitement in the community about it as well. So,
and Sarah Bowen is one of the 3 authors of the new book, Pressure Cooker, which is subtitled Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. Sarah is on the phone with us. We have assistance programs in this country, Sarah, as you document throughout the book, food stamps, EBT, in which money for food is given to low-income families. Can you talk in general what the experience tends to be for families who rely on that particular system as documented in your book?
I mean, I think the SNAP program is the most important tool that we have for addressing food insecurity in the United States. And I think that's both because of the number of families that use SNAP, but also I think it's really important that SNAP benefits are flexible. So you can't use them for alcohol or toiletries, non-food products, and you can't use them for prepared foods that are already hot, like takeout. So there are definitely lots of rules, but in terms of what food that you use, SNAP is quite flexible. And so I think that's really important because different families need different things. And, you know, the example of Patricia Washington that we were talking about is that for them, they needed a lot of processed foods. And so they needed more of that. So I think the families in our study, by and large, they really appreciated food stamps or SNAP. And it was really central. They weren't all using SNAP, but quite a few of the poor and working class families were. So I think that's a really important program. And the thing that worries me is that I feel like we keep hearing these proposals to restrict SNAP or to cut it, and they sort of, the proposals change exactly who is being restricted or how the rules would change. But SNAP seems to be perennially under attack, and that really worries me because I think it is so important in terms of keeping families afloat, in terms of food insecurity, but just in general, because that's sort of the most central task that a lot of mothers told us. Like, the first thing is that you have to be able to feed your children.
Do you think that the program comes under political attack because of that otherness that we were talking about before, the way that some people have ideas about the way that the program fund should be spent and ideas that it's being misused?
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of the critiques are from, sometimes it's from well-meaning people who say, for example, that maybe we shouldn't allow SNAP to be used for certain kinds of sweets because we shouldn't be supporting those food industries or you know, those kinds of foods with government money. And I think that those messages, some of them are well-intended and messages that come from people that are thinking about public health. But most of the messages, and for sure these recent proposals to restrict how SNAP eligibility is determined. There's one out right now that would change what they call categorical eligibility, and that could lead to, I think, 9% across the country and even higher percentages in some states losing their SNAP benefits. And those, I think, are out. They're not out of this concern for people's health, but this idea about deserving versus undeserving poor and whether the people who use SNAP are hardworking or lazy, really. And I'll just say that a lot of the families in our study use SNAP. All of those families were working incredibly hard. Many of them had jobs and they were still using SNAP because those jobs didn't pay enough. So I think that so it does worry me very much that SNAP and programs that help poor people are continually under attack.
You have a lot of anecdotes in this book and stories from people's actual lives that are sad and heartbreaking. But you had one that really stood out just because it shows the disparity that, you know, I guess between different classes. And you had a woman who was shopping with her EBT card and the price was a lot higher than she had anticipated. You wrote about how she usually could have her budget down to a science, and she spent several dollars more than she had anticipated, and she located why after studying the receipt, and it was because she picked up this new energy drink or something that her husband wanted to try and mistakenly thinking that it was on sale and it wasn't, and she ended up taking it back and getting her money restored. And it just struck me because, you know, there's little things like those of us who can go to the store and see an item and have an impulse buy and not have a second thought about it and leave with it. And these folks really don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, that was Ashley Taylor. And that was a chapter where we were talking about how sometimes there's this idea that it kind of goes along with this conversation we've been having. But there's this idea that if poor people would just budget a little better, that it could be fine. But the families, the poor families in our study, they were very good at budgeting because they had to be, and they didn't have a lot of room for error. So Ashley Taylor was an example of, you know, she had it, she couponed, she made a list in advance, she did all the things you were supposed to, and she was very good at it. And in this case, you know, she had it down to a science, as you say, and then she got there and it was just a little bit off. And so she figured out what the issue was, and she had to return that drink that she had thought it was on sale, and then it wasn't actually on sale. And, you know, we went grocery shopping with all of the 12 families that we did the observations, and we saw very clearly how good people were at budgeting and also the kind of trade-offs that they were constantly forced to make. And these are things like, should I splurge on grapes for my kids? Because my kids love grapes. But, you know, they're at a per pound, they're relatively expensive. And those are really hard trade-offs to watch people having to make, that they couldn't afford fruit for their kids, for example, which was the top thing that people told us. We asked, what would you buy if you had more money? And that was the top thing.
we're short on time. I want to get one more question in to you, Sarah, and then bring it to our local panel here. And you write about a familiar brand and a familiar situation in your chapter titled A Small Fridge. You write about a Kroger store that closed in a section of Raleigh and the impact that that had on nearby residents, particularly those who don't drive. Can you very quickly tell us about what your work found about food deserts and their impact on the community?
Yeah. So basically, our work found that people, especially the people, did not necessarily shop at the closest store. So I think to some degree, thinking that food deserts are the answer is a little bit misplaced, because people are going to shop at a store that is cheaper, even if it's a little bit farther away. So people aren't sort of automatically shopping at the closest store. On the other hand, the closing of this Kroger and having to go even farther for people who don't have cars, like, it definitely affected their food access. And one of the ways was that it was just that much harder to get fresh produce, because you're shopping once a month and maybe you get a few things, but then they're going to go bad. Once that little bit of fresh produce is gone, that's all you had for the month. So it definitely made it harder for people to have access to the food they needed.
And Amy, are you finding that that's something that local families are struggling with? Maybe the neighborhood grocery store goes away and suddenly they don't have physical access to some of these items.
Yeah, absolutely. We see that with some of our families. There was the Kroger in East Walnut Hills that closed, and that put a lot of families in a bind. There are some good local programs, like the Free Store Food Bank has a mobile food pantry, and we try to tell people about that, that it accepts their EBT benefits, and there are farmers markets that they can double their produce dollars at using their SNAP benefits, but it is still tricky for them because there's only certain times those are open and or for the mobile thing in their area. So yes, we absolutely see that.
And Kathy and Eric, before we go, if somebody were facing this situation and thinking, I want to go to the library, I want to learn about how I can prepare healthier meals, budget better. Kathy, where do you send them when they walk into the library?
Sure. I mean, we're always happy to help. We have an extensive collection of books that we can point them to, online resources, local programs as well. Our downtown library, we keep sort of a upgoing calendar of the various pantries that are open and social services. In July, we had one-stop public health resources in our atrium, and we're trying to do a lot more kind of pop-up things that people are asking for, but we had things available on cooking, cancer, depression, anxiety, very different things that people are coming in, because it runs a gamut. I mean, we are open to all ages and everyone, so everyone has a lot of different needs, and we have to know how to help them access that information.
Yeah, and I think extending opportunities like we have with this program to other locations will be a great way for us, the library, to educate people and help them to find the resources that they need for their food and meal problems. So.
Sarah Bowen is a co-author of the new book, Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. She joined us on the phone. Sarah, thanks so much for being here with us. I appreciate it very much. And we've also been joined by Kathy Bach and Eric Pennington from the Public Library of Cincinnati in Hamilton County. And we also have Amy Holler from the Ohio State University Extension Office in Hamilton County. Thanks all of you for being here as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.